something went on here, something went on there. And
hey, well,
hey, bud.
Hey.
It's been a minute.
It has been a while. It's been quite some time. A lot of stuff going on, bud.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what's new?
Well, I think we last spoke, it was, I was off to California for a big kids vacation, right? Which was fantastic, awesome. Disneyland and Universal Studios and the piers and the beaches and just up and down the coast. Got to see friends and it was nice. But on like the Sunday, the 17th, the March 17th, it was St. Patrick's Day. The morning of, we were in our spot, and we had a little place not too far from the Beverly Center. And phone rings, and my mom, it's my mom, and I'm like, hey mom, what's going on? I figure she might have, you know, forgot something or got upset about something, because she would call in the morning generally if there was something going on, because she suffers from dementia. I thought she would have some concerns, so I'm like, what's happening? And she says, Dad's gone. He's dead. I'm like, I was just, what? Kind of in a shock, obviously. And I was kind of in a shock because I had just spoken to him about 3 days before when we were in Anaheim. And I got to chat with him on the phone. I had a long conversation just about, you know, we should reconnect more and we should talk more. And, you know, the conversation I would have if he'd been gone, and now, you know, the questions that I asked just kind of randomly that night. But, I mean, it was great to have that conversation, but it was just also strange because just a few days later, he's gone. And my concern was what happened. And my mom said he had been kind of just normal. He has COPD, so he was coughing a lot. You know, he had difficulty sometimes with catching his breath, so... he had a couple coughs, but that was about it. My mom didn't hear any kicking around or any stress at all from my dad's side of the bed when they were sleeping. She just, when she got up at early in the morning, he just wasn't there. He was gone. And so at least I know that he was gone peacefully, you know, in that regard. And because of my mom's dementia, It was kind of coming in waves for her as well, on and off, and not, you know, so I still had one more day left in my vacation. Jetson just happened to be getting home from his vacation, so he was able to get up where he lives in Barrie to get to my mom's place and help out with, you know, dealing with the situation afterward. And, you know, basically, I got home a day after that. And we just started planning a funeral, and my bud Ryan Ennis, who's the new, he's new at Barrie Country Club, and he's a good friend of mine, and he arranged and helped us out there to have a nice service for Pops. It was really special. You know, the family got together and we shared some stories, and you know, got to just kind of reflect on how loving a person he was, you know. And my whole family was there, my sister Jenny and Jet and James was there, and we, you know, we just kind of had a chance to be, you know, together and talk about it for about, you know, half an hour. And then I had to get my mom back home, and because she has dementia and she's alone now, we've been kind of shift working up at her place, staying there. Jet lives by and he's always helping, and Jenny was staying there, and I've been going up there and staying there And so I guess in that environment, seeing each other a lot is good after losing your dad, you know. I guess about trying to think, the March the 17th and the kind of blur of the next couple weeks, I ended up going up back and forth, and I think it was, I mean, I'm just trying to put it together, but I mean, I got a call at the house here, and Jenny is on the phone, and she told me that James took his own life, and that was on the 12th, so the Friday. So, I mean, I texted back and forth with him a little bit, and nothing serious other than, you know, he was saying he needed some cash for groceries and stuff. He'd been living with a friend of his, Dave Demand, and usually when he was down, and he would reach out, but within the text back and forth with him about groceries, I think it was about 12 hours later, the authorities called Jenny, my sister, to tell her that he was gone. So there was no reaching out on his part. He was a poet, a writer of many things, great writer, you know, a learned writer. And he didn't leave a note. It was a terrible way that he went out. I mean, he clearly had an intention to do only that, based on the evidence that was there and how the events transpired for him to take his own life. There, I spoke to the coroner after and the police officer, and it happened in the late afternoon, yet he wasn't intoxicated, or he wasn't on any drugs, which he did have a problem with. So he was in a sense of a clear mind in that regard. But so, you know, after dealing with that, and then now, since then, you know, getting the funeral service and taking care of all that stuff, which is enough one time, let alone two times or in a month, it's just kind of, I don't know, in a way it's, it might help, because it just takes your mind off of what's really going on. But I've really been just kind of floating, just kind of coasting around with this perspective of this. I can just, you know, I can just sense, you know, the anger and frustration and just the sadness. And, you know, me and my brother and sister have kind of seen each other a lot by dealing with my mother and Barry, you know, so we've been kind of mourning a little bit, and James was outside of that a little bit because he was down and out in a sense. And I mean, I just didn't realize that it had hit him as hard, you know, because he didn't say anything about it, you know.
Was that something he ever talked about, or had he ever attempted or threatened that in the past, or was it even a word you remember him bringing up?
Not to my knowledge, because I mean, my sister deals with depression. My father dealt with depression, and his mood would swing up and down. But James was never. He was always very positive. Even if he was hammered and yelling, belligerent, but it was always just like some, you know, selfish chirping or whatever, you know, saying how great a poet he was or something, you know, that he wouldn't start trying to look for ways to end his life at the end of a night. Like, he wasn't like that. So
you can't help but wonder. I mean, those are obviously both huge life events to deal with by themselves, but together is just unimaginable. And I know all the buds have been worried about you, so it's good that you're able to do this and show your face, and it helps a lot of people that you're able to talk about it. Do you think in some way the second event was related to the first? Timing wise?
Well, I mean, he was always very admirable. You know, I had a lot of admiration for Dad. I mean, he visited up my parents all the time, you know, like he was always going up until they said, get the hell out of here because he'd drive him crazy. You know, that was James. But he loved my dad, that's for sure. And I don't know. He seemed before to have his moments of desperation and need, but that was desperation of, you know, certain things, not his own being and care. You know, he's always had care for himself in that regard. So, yeah.
We were talking about this a little bit when we were working on a record about how when your parent passes, that's the natural order of things. Like, it doesn't make it easier or any more fun, but that's kind of how it's supposed to go. Do the losses feel different because they happen in different ways, or do you process them differently, or are they both losses?
No, it's very different. I mean, my dad died of a heart attack, you know. My James took his own life. It's a big difference in terms of how you perceive things. I think that in a way that I have regret because I love James my whole life, and towards those last few months I was getting sick and tired of, you know, here's another $20 for groceries, but he buys something else or he buys drugs. And it was one of those kind of relationships where I felt that he was just going into a dark place. He got evicted from his apartment, you know. There was criminals coming in and out of his apartment all the time. People that would give him money knowing that he could never give it back. So then they had, they could use his fucking stove to cook meth, or, you know, a prostitute would loan James some money and then say, well, now I'm using your house, or, you know, some guy saying that this is how I'm using your place for this stuff. So he got evicted out of his apartment, and he was living at Dave's, and he just the cycle of drugs and, you know, allowing that behavior to happen to just so he could get high when he's not in any. I mean, he's on medication for schizophrenia, for Christ's sake. You can't do that stuff. It's something that you just don't mix. And that was kind of his lifestyle, where he just felt like, well, you know, I can go out and get drunk and do some drugs and it's no big deal. And that path, how can you respect that kind of life? And I know people say tough love and stuff, but I was kind of more give up on James Street for the last like 3-4 months, because it was just every single time I felt, why do I give you something when I know you're not using it for what you do? But I still would give him something. And even the last time I texted him 12 hours before it happened, I was literally like, man, just get yourself together, please, James. I love you. I want you to get better. That was pretty much my last text to him, was just, I care about you. And I said that I loved him, and I said that he needs to get some real help. And he was close to, all he needed to do was get to another apartment, have his social worker find him a new place where he was a completely clean slate of people that weren't going to take advantage of him. And that's what the start that he needed, at least, to get to the next step. I mean, to think that things were, because it was available to him. It wasn't like they were, he was cut off of any kind of compensation. He still had social assistance, you know, social services. So it was just unbelievable, man. That it was obviously something more than like him having an issue with where he was going to live, you know.
Does the fact that he was sober when it happened make it easier or harder?
Well, I know he had been doing crack recent, like up until days before. So it was interesting that he wasn't at the time, you know. But I guess it's a, you know, it's good to know in a sense that he at least had some kind of clarity in his mindset or whatever. But I mean, I think that if I was there, I'm not saying he would never have done that, but he wouldn't have done it then, you know. It wouldn't have happened on the 12th, you know. So I don't know. There's an element of regret in a sense, but he was on his own road to a bad place. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe if he had a chance to sit and think about it a little more with us, it might have helped. But I don't know.
I mean, it's abstract. And it's academic, which is the furthest thing from what this is. But if you play out the other option, which is you just keep giving him money every time he asks and not holding him accountable and not asking him questions about what he's doing with it, that can't be great either.
No. I mean, I think it's... I think he needed to be in a care place where he had to be monitored 24 hours a day, honestly. That's what he needed. And he was kind of using the system in a way that they couldn't get him into that situation. I mean, I've been previous when he was having serious episodes in the past, schizophrenic episodes, he'd threatened me, my family. I had to testify against him in court. He ended up going to Penetang for a year and 6 months of that in solitary because he wouldn't take anything. And I think once he kind of gave in and realized he was sick and started taking medication, he kind of came back as the old James was there again. But if he went off his meds, he would literally go to a situation where someone was probably going to be hurt, if not himself, but probably not himself.
So at Ronnie's service, was James the old James, or do you just kind of look at him and think, I don't even know who this guy is anymore?
Yeah, it was the old James, but I mean, it's just, at this point, you know, the last few months, he just kind of just could tell it was kind of catching up to him, the lifestyle, you know. But he was still a very kind and loving person, but he also had this kind of selfish side of him that was just insatiable, that he knew no break in life. He just had to keep going. He could not stop at any regard anywhere, just always kept going.
How does your mom kind of process all this through the lens of dementia? Does she have to keep being told again what's changed, or does she kind of
remember? For the first few days, once I was in Barrie, it was like she thought he was in the hospital, and but after a while, I think once we put like a picture of him in front of her, like in a memoriam kind of way, the picture that we used at the service, it just kind of reminds her, and now, by now, it's been a month now, she's definitely, it's sunken in with her, but it's still, because everything comes in waves of what's happening right now, it takes away from the grieving, I think, for her, because she hasn't cried. I haven't seen her cry yet, and believe me, we've all cried with her a million times, and she doesn't cry. She's just kind of like, yeah, you know.
Wow. Did she cry about your dad? Or you mean she's just not in a kind of headspace where she's crying right now?
I don't think she can... I don't think she can feel sad long enough for it to hit her like that. You know, when, you know, or sometimes I'll just be sitting and I'll think of my dad or my brother, mostly my brother for some reason, and I'll just, you know, I won't be able to talk. I'll just be blubbering for 5 minutes, and it's like a turn on a tap that doesn't stop. But I mean, I think that has to do with, because my mom, I don't know if she can, she seems to remember events, like the big event, but it's mostly big events in the past. And if it's something that's troubling her, then that's what's going to come back all the time. Like, she thinks the bank's calling and she owes $300 on her debit card. So that's a thing that comes every couple days. Or she has she gets a headache sometimes. And she's like, oh man, somebody hit me in the back of the head in my sleep. Like, mom, nobody hit you. Like, I don't know where she gets, someone has hit her on the head. It's not like I bumped my head. It's like a physical assault. So it becomes like this person's out to get me. That's something that kind of happens where she has this really bad headache, but it's not just a headache. It's like, man, somebody hit me on the head.
Someone in particular? Or yeah. Just some undefined person. Does she name the person?
Well,
like Doreen down the hall?
It could be anybody, you know. The other thing is, like, sometimes she'll it's like the same amount of money for the same bank account that's in South America. You know what I mean? So it's just, it turns out to just be kind of like, whatever is triggering, and it's usually in the morning, it's the same thing kind of over, and it's like Groundhog Day in a way, you know what I mean? Because she's that concerned, she calls Jet's at work, so he doesn't answer the phone, so that means, oh fuck, it's on, it happened, you know what I mean? Because Jet's not answering the phone, he's allowing it to go on, so by the time I get the call, she's like, oh, Jeremy, you won't believe it. What is it, Mom? I just did it this morning. I was like, Mom, the bank thing is a scam. I got her to finally write it down on paper. Jeremy says your assets and funds are safe. This bank thing is a scam. They're pretending to be the bank. You know, like, she doesn't have access.
Oh, it's one of those.
Yeah.
Those are confusing at the best of time.
Oh, I know. It's awful. It really is. Because if she had access to money, she would be writing them a check right now.
Yeah.
So.
That is the worst.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Taking advantage of seniors with stuff like that.
Yeah. Let's take a little break, bud. Want to take a break?
The only thing I know, Jer.
Sorry.
The only thing I know is that, and a lot of the buds have said this too in the last few weeks in messages that I've seen to you, there's no template for it, there's no timeline for it, there's no, like, in 60 days you'll be your happy self again. The only thing that I seem to know is you have to take time and sit in it and feel it and process it, and I think it's a good sign that you're a blubbery mess from time to time, and I think it'd be really weird if you weren't, because it would mean you're either stuffing it down or pretending it didn't happen or not allowing yourself to think about it. And I think that is in typical fashion for you, very honest and very real to be feeling those feelings, and it is it can't be easy, but it's very generous of you to talk about all of it, all the stuff that you're going through, because I know the buds feel it and they're worried about you. And I know buds are going through similar stuff too. And so you talking about it helps a lot.
I've had so many amazing messages, man, from so many great people. And I can't see us talking about much other than this kind of what's going on anyway. So I'd say let's just take a break and we'll be right back, right?
BRB, bud.
Hey, where's the snow thrower from? Canadian Tire? Is it a Playmaker?
Where is it? From Canadian Tire? No, it's from somebody's yard. Got saw it in the yard, eh? Well, you know, he can spot a good deal a mile away.
Oh, man, yeah, that's right. He saw it.
But he changed the motor in it, so like he's done a lot of stuff to it, right?
What's going on, bud?
So, yeah, I mean, I got to thank everybody that reached out. All bods throughout, but, I think talking to people, connecting in, with friends and people that by going up to Barry, I've kind of caught up with, you know, Don Murphy, who's an old friend from baseball days in Barry, and I think it was funny and cool for her to see him because she remembers him when he was a little kid, you know, stuff like that. And
cool for who to see who?
My mom to see Don, you know, because she remembers when we were kids playing baseball together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So does she remember him, no problem?
She remembers him when he was a kid, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But she probably forgets that, like, 20 minutes after he left, she probably wouldn't remember him if he came back in. So there's that. It's weird. But in terms of just kind of, you know, I think if anybody's has, you know, issues or dealt with suicide in any way, you have to kind of reach out to people in some way, just to kind of communicate, because it's not the same thing as somebody dying of a heart attack. There's so much more, you know, that affects you, and you know, it's important to reach out. I got to thank a lot of friends for being there. Lairdo, my buddy, you know, he's fucking such a beauty. He flies in and just kind of shows up and spends a night on the cot up at my mom's in Barrie. You know, just that's
a good friend.
You know, just good friends. You know, everybody reaching out, talking on a regular basis. Tim Oxford, all my friends just kind of talking and just, you know, having an ear available. So many cool buds. Even Ed Robertson has been nice enough to just kind of keep in touch. And awesome. Matt Cameron from Pearl Jam. And obviously, you know, in Soundgarden, I mean, he knows. And I think that's probably why, you know, we've been communicating, is just, you know, Chris took his own life in a terrible way as well. And that was Matt's brother, you know, so it's been kind of nice to have the communication open from that perspective, you know. And
I've never been through it, fortunately. Is the difference that with a death like this, is there anger? Do you feel mad at him?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I have sadness, and I think that's what hits me most. Guilt, absolutely, for sure. You know, everybody could have done more. You know, I would say, yeah, the sadness hits the most, because the sadness is when I think about him and what I think about his feelings and his heart were at that time. To do that, and that's what makes me feel sad, because that's when I just see him, you know, as just, you know, a young soul, you know, just a bright light that he was, you know. You know, he just was happy, seemingly, understood the beauty in life.
Did he?
Yeah, I mean, his poetry was beautiful. You know, he was a great writer. I don't know. It just he said I don't know. He blamed Rumi, the writer Rumi, on him having too much perspective on the dark side of life. But I think if you think hard enough and long enough, you find, you know, the good and the bad parts of both of those things. And to succumb to that one, I never thought in a million years that he would do that. But that doesn't mean I condemn it, or it, and not him doing it or anybody doing it. I don't condemn it. I just didn't think he would do that. And
the word that people sometimes bring up about it is that, and I think you even said, maybe this is your mom's take on it originally, that it's, you know, a selfish thing to do, or cowardly thing to do, or it's not fair. All I can think is, I don't know if cowardly is the word. I wouldn't have the whatever to see that through. I can't imagine having the whatever the word is, balls or courage or whatever. All I can think is, if that is the best option for you in any given moment, you must have to feel very strongly about it to have the wherewithal or whatever it takes to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he had his intention was to go, period, and that was it. There was no, it was obvious, because he tried to slit his wrists and realized that wasn't going to happen in time, and then he decided to take a boot lace from his one boot and fasten a noose, put it over a rafter in a laundry room, and finish the job.
Man.
So there was no, like, this is what I'm doing. That was a clear. So I get angry. I get to do that at his best friend growing up's house in the basement. There's an element of me saying that's a selfish thing to do to his family and his life. So there is that. I mean, Dave loved him too, and Dave deserves, you know, love too, you know, in this situation. I at the end of the day, to do what he did, it doesn't matter where it happened, but I realize that he wanted to go, and it's his own decision to go. It's just hard to kind of piece it together at this point, when I just don't think it would have happened at that moment in time if we would have talked, you know. But
how do you explain that to your kids?
It might have happened in the future at another point in time for him. I don't know, but it's hard. I mean, fuck. I mean, it's all those things. It's there's compassion there for his soul being at rest, but there's still anger at the display of brutality. you know. So I think I'm just, I don't know. You got to keep going to try and understand that stuff or whatever. But I think it's more, I'm happy to have love here, you know. Let's take a break.
What do you tell your kids about James and how he died?
Well, Annalise was there sitting beside me when Jenny called and told me. So she could tell. And she'd just been through it with my dad. Like, I mean, we talked about this, you and I, when my dad passed away, of the power of telling your kids and just that moment. And the only thing I was looking forward to was the love of my kids, to just share the grief of that. It's the only thing good about it. It's just to be kind of in understanding to them of how much you love the person. And when I told my big boy John, it was like he got it so strong, and the hug was incredible. And same with Annalise, she just so knowing, and like just the understanding of like this is real, this isn't just, you know, life is actually starting to assemble this big picture that's actually legit. And all three of my kids, and I think Annalise being the youngest, and hearing me, you know, react to James, it was probably pretty intense as well, you know, just because I never expected it to happen, you know, so I was pretty shocked.
I remember when my mom passed, your protection gene kicks in. You want to shield them from all the bad things that happen in the world. And when I made the decision to deal them in, I'll never forget those tiny hugs. Like, they were maybe the best hugs I've ever gotten in my life. And you realize that, you know, they get it more than we ever give them credit for. And they want to help and make it better. And you share in that grief with them. And that's what being a family is all about. And you lost someone from the generation above, but you gain the comfort and support of someone in the generation below. Like, it's full circle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the circumstances around how James died, do you get into that stuff, or it doesn't really matter? Like, that's hard enough for an adult to understand. How do you explain it to kids?
Well, I mean, John's 13, Jack's 11, and Anna will be 9 in August, so
right.
I mean, I think that they understood with my dad, and they know James. They know he's had a lot of troubles, and they've seen him on the holidays, and they've seen him around, and they know that he has issues, and he's still, you know, Uncle James, right? And they know that he took his own life, so that's the truth. And whether it happens young or whatever, it's still something that strikes hard. And I'd rather it strike hard than not strike at all, because they see the life that he led and what happens when you can kind of be that way, you know.
Was there any part of you, because of all the troubles that he had and his history of challenges with addiction and mental health issues, was any part of you relieved?
Well, not really, because I mean, it was never really too much in terms of concern. My only concern was just that he was kind of living, and he was in a situation where he was, you know. So I don't think there's relief. There would be relief if he was in pain or was something that was really bad, you know what I mean? It's not like he was just this burden on everybody. It wasn't that big a deal in terms of, like, it was just more like a little bit here and there that it's like, oh, Jesus, James, could you just get it together, you know? So, like, if he was in and out of psychosis or in the hospital all the time where it was really bad, sure. But I just felt that he was happy enough that there was no, you know, I just think he could have kind of had just a happier existence for a long time, you know.
Simple question, but given the fact that all of the planning and stuff is done, how are you?
It's kind of so fresh that I don't know. I'm not great, man. I mean, I'm okay in terms of you know, the family are awesome. Everybody's loves me, and I feel their love, and I love them, and I know I'm super grateful of my situation and what's happening to me, and you know, so many things are great. So I'm just kind of hanging on to all those great things. You know, it's just there's definite moments of just real kind of just sadness, you know, that's but I know that that's gonna hopefully pass soon, you know. Not soon, probably won't ever, to some extent, but the level that it is right now, where it's hard to kind of comprehend sometimes.
That's two huge blows in a ridiculously short period of time.
Yeah.
Like, when James died, it was almost like, are you kidding? Because I felt like you had just started to rally a little bit after Ronnie, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the boat had just kind of stopped rocking.
Yeah. And, I was starting to feel with my dad that some peace, because, you know, he felt that he did have some pain and he had some issues. And he, you know, not about 4 or 5 months before, he had to go to the hospital in the middle of the night because he was having an attack and couldn't get his breath. And I mean, that's terrifying to go through that on a regular basis. So, and my dad would have these moments in the night where he'd just be like talking, my mom would say, or just be laughing, sound like he was having the time of his life. She'd be like, where is he right now? Like, he's at some party that's like way more fun than anything. So I'm just hoping that he connected to that full time, you know. That's what it feels like. It's like, I think there's an element, whenever any of us go, there's probably an element of, okay, I'm deciding to go at this moment, you know, when it's not an accident or something. I'm saying there's an element of acceptance and saying I'm going to go, and you pull the switch inside. You know, I'm sure there's some waverance of that. And I think my dad, the moment he caught that thing of like, the veil turning over, and this is the other side of it. I think he was like, let me go. Yeah, I'm good.
Well, I guess the truth is that the quality of life for him wouldn't have improved. It's not like it was getting better, right? Yeah. It would have been a kind of slow decline.
Well, it would have been an oxygen tank, and, you know, probably he would have been in a wheelchair, and yeah, it's not the other way, that's for sure. It's not like you're going to start jogging in 6 months.
Would he have been lost had your mom passed first?
I think so, yeah. For sure. He'd be really, man, yeah. See, like, that's just thinking about it. He'd be so sad, and it would be, his mental state was all there. He'd just be just crushed. He loved my mom so much. That's just, yeah. he'd be done.
Does she miss him?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she says it's really hard. But like I said, she doesn't. The dog, the fucking dog, in the middle of the night, comes in the kitchen, starts crying for like a half an hour. It's like, I think the dog's grieving harder than everybody in the whole family.
Wow.
Just comes out, starts crying and crying around, looking around, crying.
That's hard to take.
And it's only like a 4-year-old dog. It's not like a senile, crazy dog. Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. But I mean, my mom will just kind of, yeah, it's sad. But then we'll start feeling sad with her and then well up and start crying. And then she'll be like, oh, it's no big deal. And you look at her and she's just kind of like, it's okay. You know?
Any of the Junior Baguchi show up at the service?
But I'm saying, if it was the other way and my dad, and it was my mom going, holy jeez.
Be
like,
bad.
I can't imagine he would, yeah. I can't imagine. I really can't. I don't think he would have had it any other way. Yeah.
Any of the Junior Baguchi show up?
No, wouldn't that have been awesome?
Were there any friends from back in the day?
Flew in. Like, my dad didn't really have friends since the 60s, right? So there weren't any. Dougie Scott was probably the only family friend that, like, he would come, like, that they would talk on a regular basis. He was close to his brother, Uncle John, there. But he passed away a couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. So, yeah, the no Bakugis, but I'm sure it would have been nice to see a couple of those guys.
Would have poured one out.
Yeah.
So at this service, it was mostly friends of his kids?
Of Ron, yeah.
Like friends of yours?
I was surprised the amount, yeah, yeah. Friends of all the family and kids, my cousins and even Jay and Dan showed up. That was sweet of them to come.
Nice.
To spend some time and just, we had some awesome pictures out and his pieces were displayed, I said. So yeah, just good. It was nice. But, you know, even James's service was really nice as well. Like a lot of old friends from Mansfield and people that I hadn't seen in a long time. A lot of friends that I didn't think were even there. A lot of people came, just like, oh, an old friend of James, just wanted to, you know, pay my respects. So, I mean, that was pretty cool as well. There was a lot of people from all over the place for James, too. So, yeah, then that was 2 days ago. Like, it's just happening. It's still happening, man. Like, I'm just happy that we're getting the pod out, man, because it feels like time has stopped for me, although it's been probably 2 months, you know, and I'm so psyched that we're, you know, so busy together, and, you know, it's helping me, you know, focus on the good things in life, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it, in terms of timing, you know, this thing that we built together and the fact that we chose each other for those reasons, that we wanted to be in a situation where if shit like this happens, there's a stable ground, and having Sylvia now too, it's just added to that. So, it's just, I'm very lucky to have you guys, and just the fact that we're so busy, and I mean, we should share that. Let's talk about how busy we are.
Like, yeah, I guess we haven't.
It's great, man.
We haven't done a pod since we announced Your Two Cents.
Yeah.
Which is the Canadianity Content Studios show for smart consumers of this generation. Mm-hmm. It is not a Street Sense reboot. No. But it is in the proud tradition of blending pop culture and parody and consumer issues. I think we both maybe misinterpreted is the wrong word. Underestimated is the word I'm looking for. how much people are clamoring for financial information. Because when we knew we were going to do the show, we thought, like, you know, we'll do maybe something about ordering food and stuff. People are like, the feedback when we've asked, what do you guys want to know about? Mm-hmm. What is a TFSA? What is an RSP? How do I pay down my student loan debt? Yeah. So it feels satisfying. The first episode is rolling out May 6th or 7th, I think. Mm-hmm. It feels really satisfying to know that in that episode, there is a hardcore financial information piece. Because when you think about it, as teenagers, you get a little bit in high school. And then by the time you hit your 30s, you probably have enough income to look at putting a down payment on a house or something, or you're kind of well on your way. But your 20s is kind of this wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't really have much information. You don't necessarily have all that much dough. For example, I shot a piece with a person who works at a credit union here. It's Credit Unions of Atlantic Canada that is sponsoring the show. Mm-hmm. And we're very overt about the fact that our financial pieces will feature people from the credit union. So this woman, her name is Elaine. She's a branch manager in Antigonish. And her piece was about, how do I pay down my student loan? And she said, first of all, relax. Most people have a student loan debt. I have a student loan debt. And even her saying that is already very confidence instilling. Mm-hmm. The second thing that she says is, most people feel this crazy rush to get it all paid off as quickly as possible, but that is actually good debt. It's okay to have that debt, make a really long amortization period and chip away at it. So that way, if you're taking 15 or 20 years to pay it off, if your circumstances change, maybe you're in school right now, but in 4 years you'll have an income, you can adjust your payments accordingly. Like, stuff that's like, wow, I don't think people know that.
Yeah.
So we're doing things that are as broad as, how do I make a budget? And as specific as, okay, you're ready to invest. You have a bit of extra dough. Here are some things you should know about investing. So obviously Street Sense didn't exist when the internet did. So this whole added layer of, I have to take a picture of my $17 salad to keep up with the Cyber Joneses is like a whole extra layer of consumer pressure that didn't exist the last time a show like this was done.
Yeah, and I think also with the internet now, when you search for stuff, it's hard to find answers for information, especially if you're like looking for like phone prices and plans.
It's
so that's another reason why we did that, like an idea, like, I don't know if we can talk about that one yet.
Sure.
The concept.
Yeah,
the
sure.
We came up with Game of Phones and explained the hardships of trying to deal with telecommunications as a consumer.
For example, you discovered that Canada is among the highest rates in the world. Canada has the highest rates in the world. It's because there are fewer competitors.
Data and rates are insane.
There's no incentive to undercut each other because everybody's making money. So why would you try to go lower? The only reason to go lower is if there are more competitors in the marketplace. Like, that is a pretty key piece of information. And the other thing is, data is not unlike Bitcoin. It's this thing that no one can really say what it costs or what it's worth. But the phone companies can just determine what it costs.
Yeah, it's like ink and 3M, right? Like,
yeah.
They call the price of it. It's, you know, the reason why is because it's the monopoly of how it comes to you. You know, how they have it from distribution to the VAT.
Yeah, it's like Pizza Corner in Halifax. It's the same family that owns, used to be, that owns all three. Yeah. And so they kind of have price wars, but they're kind of in cahoots. And really, they're just kind of driving it all together.
And so they all kind of taste the same.
It's been interesting to try to define what the strike zone is. And I know from doing shows for kids, you know, that you say JohnoVision is for 12 to 16. Well, 12 is so different from 16, and urban's different from rural. And it's kind of the same with 20-somethings because in this part of the country, for example, buying a house in your 20s is actually not inconceivable. Mm-hmm. In in this part of the world, for example, getting married in your 20s is probably more common than it is in Toronto. Bigger cities. Yeah. So figuring out, like, is saving for a wedding ring a valuable piece for this target age? And sort of what it comes down to is, I guess if it interests you, it'll interest you and you'll watch the piece. But if it doesn't, you probably won't.
Yeah.
So every episode's going to be three pieces, and then we'll junk them up and share those three pieces independently on different platforms. So every episode will have kind of a celebrity cameo-ish and a parody-ish and a financial piece-ish.
Yeah. Good times. The first one's exciting. We got
super good times.
We got some good stuff lined up,
including a cameo from Jeremy Taggart
from Dollar Bill.
The Much Money host.
Much Money, where it's a parody of a classic '80s, '90s Much Music VJ show, where all he cares about is cash, and all he wants to know about is how much stuff costs and how much it's worth, and he talks to the Arkells. We have a nice sit-down with Tim and Max.
Which, great. You realize it's kind of hard to tick all of the boxes that a parody like that has to have. If you look at Game of Phones for a second, it has to hold up as a parody of Game of Thrones for people that like the show. Number two, it has to make sense to people who don't watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So that they're not lost or feel like it's too inside baseball.
Exactly.
And the third thing is, it has to have hardcore, concrete takeaway information.
Yeah.
That doesn't slow the thing down.
Yeah.
So to make it work on all those levels, and same with Dollar Bill and the Much Money environment.
Well, who doesn't want to know how much, like, a tour bus costs or how much, you know?
Well, I think that's really interesting.
There's so many things that they kind of divulge that, like, people wouldn't have a clue. So it's great.
Yeah. Even the way Max and Tim talked about the economics of a tour bus. Like, on the surface, we won't give away specifics, but on the surface, it costs a lot per day. But what it allows them to do is get a good night's sleep in transit so that they can capitalize on all that morning radio and stuff when they get to the next town, as opposed to sleep in a hotel, get up and drive to the next thing just in time for the gig. Like, that's the kind of economy that people wouldn't necessarily think about.
Yeah, so it's been
fun. So we're
psyched. Yeah, it's been good times. Can't wait to keep it rolling.
Super good times, bud. Mm-hmm. And we're doing 8 episodes, and the credit unions of Atlantic Canada have been super supportive and really into it. But suffice to say, we're always looking for people who have both story ideas or want to appear on camera. For example, for an upcoming piece where it's called Make the Case, and we're going to get 5 or 6 people to make the case for their favorite streaming service. Just by shooting a 30-second video of themselves explaining why I'm a Spotify person and here's why. So there are lots of opportunities for people to be in the show as well. So the email address is ideas@yourtwocentswithac.tv.com. ideas@yourtwocents.com. No, ideas@yourtwocentstv.com. Send us an electronic message.
And Aaron will have the dialed up version on screen there. Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, should we wrap her up, bud?
Yeah, man.
It's I feel like we've covered a lot and we got our feet wet again.
Yeah, we talked a lot. It was actually nice to have that chat, as hard as it is. Even though it seems difficult, like, you can't really go wrong talking to people about their feelings and situations that they go through. And I can't tell you how many times someone has come up to me and said, or, you know, a good friend has said, man, sorry, I don't know what to say. It's like, that's it, though. The offer of just your ear or to the care, the uncomfortableness of that kind of, I don't know what to say, is everything. Like, that's it. That's love, man. Like, that's a great thing. You know, it's
there is no right thing to say. There's nothing you can say.
No, there isn't. And I don't expect people to try. And it's just to speak and say hello is all it is, you know. And sometimes people have said things that have helped, you know, in their own situations, or someone can relate because it happened to them. But even then, it's still just kind of like, it just another level of understanding. And the most, I guess that's all it just ends up being, is just like kind of researching the idea of getting through loss and just trying to put everything, you know, in a place that at least is stable.
I realized in seeing a lot of the messages and things that people are sending to you how many people suicide has touched.
Yeah.
It's hard to find people it hasn't touched.
Yeah.
And it's it's you know, thanks in part to your tournament in the summer, for example, people are noticeably more comfortable talking about it now than they were even a few years ago. And yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, there's, for a while I was like, well, we have to stop this. And unfortunately in my mind, it sometimes seems unstoppable. And I think the more important part is care after the fact to the people, or if anyone is feeling that way, to get better before it happens. But in terms of just going through that loss, it's just that you have to kind of reach out, you know, you have to fight from the inside to kind of just appreciate the fact that, you know, that you have the ability to love. And if you're in a feeling that you can't even love yourself, then you might need to talk to someone to feel some love from somebody out there that will definitely be there to kind of at least, it's like oxygen from, you know, when you're underwater. It doesn't have to be your own to get you back to the top, you know.
Wow. That's well said.
Yeah.
Love you, bud.
Love you too, man. Thanks for being here. Good chatter. Yeah. Thanks, buds.